Turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. We're talking about authority in the family life relationship. What does the word authority mean? The right to rule. That's right. And why does the man have the right to rule in the family relationship? Because it was delegated by God. Not because of his strength. Not because of his superior intellect. Not because he forced it, but because it's delegated by God. Therefore, there's a mutual responsibility. What's the responsibility of the man in view of the fact his authority is delegated? Of the man. That's a good answer. But I want to concentrate on the concept of authority. What's his responsibility in the exercise of his authority? Use it for the benefit of the wife. Why? I can see my question is not clear, so I'll ask it a different way. Because God delegated it, and he's got to try to please the one who delegated it to him. Delegated authority has been entrusted by someone, and it's the responsibility of the one who has received the delegated authority to exercise it according to the will of the one who delegated it. We studied an important lesson that way in the Old Testament with a famous character. Who was that? Saul, right? And so, while men have been delegated authority, and there's some good answers to love his wife, to care for her, those kinds of things, good. But why? Because God expects him to use it that way. Now, what is the responsibility of the wife in view of the fact that her husband's authority is delegated by God? It is to submit to that authority. Because it's delegated, to respect the fact that it's delegated and thus to submit, period. Submit, period. Respectfully. That's right. And it's not to submit because she's afraid of him, but to submit why? What? Because that's God's command. And if you're in 1 Peter 3, look at verse 6. He uses Sarah as an example. She called Abraham Lord or Master or Ruler. It's the idea of authority. It's the idea, not necessarily L-O-R-D. But she respected his role even though she felt free to express her opinions, her views. And then you'll note at the end of the verse, you've become her children. What does that mean, you become her children? You become like her. The word child here is used in the sense of imitation. You share her views, her character. You become her children if you do what is right. So why do you submit? Why do you respect? It's the right thing to do. Not because the man's always right, not because you like him, not because he always makes good decisions, it's because it's the right thing to do. Now look at the last part of the verse. Without becoming frightened by any fear is the way the New American Standard translates it. The idea is she respects him not because she's afraid he's going to hurt her, abuse her. It's not that. She does it throughout this context, in this verse 6, why does she do it? Verse 6? The right thing to do. That's why she does it. It's the right thing to do. And then up in verse 4, look at the end of the verse, which is the same thing in a different words. It's precious in the sight of God. So right before God. Okay. Now, we left off class before we got to verse 7. So we looked at the first 6 verses somewhat. We want to look at verse 7. So the first six verses has to do with the wife and her respectful submission to her husband. Then verse 7, he turns his attention to the man. And so you husbands in the same way. Back up in verse 1, we have in the same way. You've heard me say likewise. And so all the way from back chapter 2:11, he's talking about how you live in an ungodly world. And it could be this man's wife is not a Christian as well. But that doesn't relieve him of his responsibilities toward her because they are fellow heirs, the text says, of the grace of life. That is, they're both made in the image of God. And that being the case, she's just as important before God as he is. And so his delegated authority does not mean he's more important or he's on a different level, but he's to treat her with respect as well. Now notice says, live with your wives in an understanding way. This version says, as with a weaker vessel. Now the word vessel in the New Testament period, they use that word for like different kind of vessels they may have to use, say, in the temple or in their homes. There would be vessels that were made, for example, out of clay. There might be vessels made out of silver or gold. And so there were different kind of vessels or containers. And so he says, as with a weaker vessel. So did we use the illustration about Sam and his pot? Did we not? Now, Sam likes to go fishing. So let's suppose he goes in the kitchen and he's getting ready to go fishing. And he said, man, I'm going to need something to drink from. He goes gets one of Ashley's nice glasses, maybe made out of crystal, a real pretty one. Gets a real nice bowl made out of glass that she kind of saves for her company. Goes throw that in the back of her truck, back of his truck. Is that going to work? What's going to happen to those vessels if he does that? They're going to break. So he says, you know, I'm going to have some fish to fry. So what kind of pan might he get? Maybe get an old cast iron pan. You can throw that in the back of the truck. You're not going to hurt it. But if he's going to take her crystal or whatever nice stuff, he better pack that stuff up carefully, treat it tenderly. So dwell with your wives as a weaker vessel. Not saying women are weaker in intelligence. It's not saying women are weaker physically. It's not even saying women are weaker. Look back in chapter 2, in verse 4, coming to Jesus as a living stone. Is Jesus a stone? What kind of figure of speech is this? Simile. It's called a simile. He's as or like. And so he's simply using a stone to illustrate something. He even calls the Christian stones. We don't think, well, Christ is a stone. Christians are stones. So when he says, as with a weaker vessel, now sometimes as with refers to somebody who's actually the thing being described, but oftentimes that's not the case. And he's not saying, if I understand it, that a woman is weaker. I know that women sometimes are more intelligent. Sometimes women are stronger. It's not that. But he's talking about how you treat a woman if you understand. It says, in an understanding way. This has to do with moral and spiritual understanding. Hold your finger here and go to Colossians chapter 3. Just hold your finger here and go to Colossians chapter 3. And look at verse 19. Husbands, love your wives. This verse says, do not be embittered against them. The New International Version says, do not be harsh. So your version may translate it in some other way like that. Treat them harshly. And so here he's in a position of authority. He may think that makes him a dictator. And he has the right to issue edicts, whether they make any sense or not. But they satisfy his whims. Turn it around. As a man, you work on a job, you have a supervisor. Do you want him to be that kind of supervisor? Would you appreciate it if he considers your circumstances, what his demands may put upon you? You do. Dwell with your wives in an understanding way. She's in that role relative to you. So treat her with consideration and tenderness and kindness. And you know, men, you know, a wife can work in the work world, and she may have a male boss, and she may learn to put up with that, even when he's maybe not very kind. But oftentimes when she comes home, it's different with her husband. And a man can crush his wife just with the tone of his voice, with the expression on his face. That's not necessarily bad. Don't you want a wife that's tender? You don't want a, you know, you don't want to marry a Caesar for a wife. And so he's saying, men, look, try to understand your wife, the position she's in, her state and her emotional circumstances, and dwell with her in an understanding way. Yes, take the rule. But you'll note he says, as a fellow heir of the grace of life, she's your equal as far as God is concerned. Treat her that way. How important is that to a man according to verse 7? Impact his prayers. If it impacts his prayers, will it impact anything else about his worship? That's right. Prayer is synecdoche, part for the whole, for his whole worship. Forget about the Lord's Supper. You can forget about whatever you do in worship. God don't want it if you mistreat your wife. What a lesson to us men about this matter of authority in the husband-wife relationship. I had said earlier in another class that when Adam went to sleep, there was no woman. He was lonely. God said, I'm going to make someone to solve that problem. So he awoke, and there was Eve in all her pristine innocence and beauty. Remember I told you there was a tag attached? What did it say? No? You're ahead of me, Elizabeth. To Adam with love from God. Now, Elizabeth's been through this class, so she knows what I'm fixing to say. That there was another tag attached. And that is the idea of fragile, handle with care, or something of that nature. In other words, actually the way I put it is handle with care or answer to the Creator. That's pretty serious, isn't it? And so when we stand in judgment, men, if I understand the text, you and I will give account as to how we exercised our authority and whether or not we treated our wives with tenderness and kindness and respect and love. Now, you'll note all through this text, you'd start out in verse 2, that she's to have respectful behavior. You'll see in verse 7, he's to show her honor. That's respect. A healthy relationship. Sometimes you don't have one party who'll cooperate, but a healthy relationship to reach its potential is dependent on mutual respect. She respects him. He respects her. That'll go a long way to building the kind of relationship God intended. All the way back from chapter 2:11, all these relationships that's being discussed, respect is a key thread throughout them, whether it's to the government or to a master or whatever it may be. Yes, sir. Good point Ennis makes. A healthy relationship will certainly impact the rest of the family. I don't know what it would be like to grow up in a tumultuous, chaotic family where the husband and wife do not respect one another. But I feel for people that have had that background. I will say this. You can overcome it. I know that because there's people sitting in this audience who have. You can. But that is a loss. And you don't want your children to grow up in it. They want to see a mother and a father. You want your children to see a mother and a father who respect one another. Any other comments on 1 Peter 3 before we go to 1 Timothy 5? Yes, sir. Right. Don't always work, does it, Sam? Yeah, I know. I'm with you.
That's something that we just gotta, I gotta catch myself when I'm doing that and say, you know what, she doesn't appreciate my humor.
I'm in the same boat with you. Don't mean anything by it, but sometimes it's not received too. That's a good point Sam makes. You know, guys can interact in ways that you don't want to interact with your wife. And again, I'm not saying it's bad. I'd much rather be married to a woman who's feminine, tender-hearted, than some guy, you know, like at work. So I'm not saying that's bad, but that is a challenge to us guys. And that's a good point, Sam. Mike, did you have a comment? I know a lot of brethren take weaker here to refer to authority, and that's true. Her authority is not the same as them, but that's not the comparison. Her authority in the family versus his authority in the family. That's not the comparison in the text. The text is her submission and his authority. And so now, in view of the fact you've been delegated authority, live with her as with a weaker vessel, as Rocky has pointed out. Okay, so these are some thoughts at least for you to discuss. Y'all are discussing the checklist, correct? You don't have to raise your hand, but maybe we ought to put a chart up here. You get a gold star, you know, like. We encourage you, if you're not doing that with your mate, to sit down and discuss these things, because that will encourage practical application. And you'll sit in this class and say, oh, yeah, I'm in good shape on that one. Wait, go talk to your mate, see what they think. You may get a little different perspective. Okay? First Timothy 5:14. Where? Jamie had a comment? Good point, Jamie. Good point. We set examples for those around us, whether it be a child or a peer. Good point that Jamie makes. And whether we like it or not, people observe us. We say, I'll do my thing. I don't mean to impact anybody. Can you live in this world not impact anybody? It doesn't work. You can't do it. You do whether you like it or not. And that's the way God designed us, and actually for our good, isn't it? So we benefit from the example, good examples. Well, we've got to have the discernment to separate the good from the bad, but that's part of living in this world. All right, 1 Timothy 5:14. Do women have authority in the family? How would you prove it?
Well,
1 Timothy 5:14 is a great example. Look at 1 Timothy 5:14. I want the younger widows to get married, bear children. Now, this version says, keep house. We've encouraged you in your Bible study to compare versions. And so, I don't know if you ever do that. This would be a great text to illustrate the value of that. The American Standard Version of 1901, which is probably the most literal version you can have, though many people don't own it, never seen it, won't use it, but it's a great text to compare with. But anyway, the way they translate this is rule the house. The English Standard Version does a good job on this. It says manage their households. And this is from a word, this keep house. It's not talking about sweeping the floors and doing the dishes and making the beds. She does have domestic responsibilities. I know that from Titus chapter 2. But this is talking about authority, ruling the household. Those in the house who would be under her authority. That may include, say, women servants. It would certainly include her children, would it not? And so does she have authority over the children? Yes. Who gave it to her? God, not the husband. That's important. God gave it to her. So if God gave it to her, does she have a responsibility to exercise it? Yes. So, what happens sometimes in families? Johnny, if you don't behave when Daddy gets home, is it Daddy's job to exercise that authority or Mama's job? Both. But can she put it off to Daddy? No. No. So, she may need Daddy's help at times, but it's her responsibility to exercise rule. I just can't do anything with this kid. Why can't you? Let's say the kid's 2 years old. How old does a 2-year-old weigh? 20 pounds? 30 pounds? And the woman weighs what? 120, 130 pounds? You can't manage a 2-year-old? Problem is, we don't know what discipline means anymore. But it's your responsibility one way or other. God gave it to you. If I understand this verse. And she's to manage the household. Now, got a couple questions here. And we'll put them together. I want your comments. How can the man in the house, the husband, either reinforce or subvert her role? How can he reinforce or subvert her role?
He can support her in the decision that she's making to discipline. Well, Melissa wants to discipline Aurora or Sean. I come home, I tell them, look, if she spanks you, I'm coming to do it too. And, you know, reinforce the discipline that she's providing and let them know that she's doing what needs to be done.
Very good. I don't know if you heard the comments, but it's the idea of reinforcing what the mother has done. How can he subvert that? Well, is it okay for him to disagree with what she's done?
It's okay for him to disagree that they come home and coddle them and tell them that she shouldn't have done that. He needs to be placed away from her.
You mean he can't tell her, I disagree with what you've done?
In private.
What?
In private.
In private. If he disagrees with her, go into the bedroom and talk about it. And then if she agrees, she can go back and correct it. But don't subvert her role. The kids are quick to learn that, hey, I can go to Daddy. Or vice versa. I can go to Mama. She's weak. And so you need to have a united front in this. And if, there can be times you'll differ about the discipline of children. There's been time my wife was wrong. But, oh, I guess I'll have to go home and do the contact, the checklist. But anyway, a lot of times she was right. And so But you want to reinforce. That's your job, man, because God delegated her that rule. And Keith made an excellent point about not overruling her decision, especially in front of the children. I saw a hand up back here. Yes, Lisa?
Where does submission
fall into
that? Where does submission fall into that?
The man and the woman discuss it, and maybe the husband feels like it needs to go a different direction. As long as it's not a violation of the will of God, she's going to have to at least respect his decision in that. Again, this is not a trembling type fear, but there'll be times maybe that a husband and wife will disagree, but after they discuss it, if the man still disagrees, what do you think the woman ought to do? Go out and tell the kids, look, I disagree with what daddy says, but y'all got to do what daddy says. Is that it? She's undermining his role then, isn't she? See? Hey, we got some young people in this class. I wonder what they're sitting there thinking. So what I think is if the mother disciplines the child and spanks them, the daddy ought to discipline them too. Don't you young people agree? Yeah? Oh, I don't know if you're going to have universal agreement on that there, Noah, but anyway. Okay. That's Nadine, you're showing your age. Nadine says you get a spanking in school, you come home and get another spanking. There are two things that's not true today. One, you don't get spanking in school. You can throw a fit and get on the floor and kick your feet, right, Jamie? Poor Jamie, when she was teaching, she'd tell me about that kind of stuff, and there's nothing she could do. That's sad. But yes, you and I came from an age. That's a good point. She said that same reason you have problems in the school. That's right. My brother was a principal in Tennessee, and He had the police force with him, fortunately, the court. But he'd take teenagers that were in high school, bring them down to the office, put them between two file cabinets, get a big old board, leave the loudspeaker on, and get after it. Go through all the school. Can't do that anymore. But they understood who was in control. They didn't like it. Parents didn't like it. They had the court behind them, kick them out of school. Wish we had that today. But we don't. So the first thing is teachers aren't allowed to do it. Principals aren't allowed to do it. Then parents don't do it. My sweet little thing. And we're taught, you know, you can't even lay your hand on a kid to discipline, which is foolish. But anyway, that's another matter. We'll get to that in another lesson. So not only undermining the decisions she makes, but not demeaning her wisdom, her love, her ability, you know, in front of the children, saying you don't have any sense. Why do you make that decision? That's shameful. That's wrong for men to do that. And I think men will be held accountable for that kind of an attitude and conduct. I hear somebody. All right, let's look at some history that helps us, biblical history that helps us in the husband-wife relationship and authority. Back in Genesis chapter 13, we have the example of Lot. And you're familiar with Lot and his uncle. And Abram was willing to give him his choice of the land, and Lot made a choice. And so it says in verse 11, Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan. Here's my question. Why did he make that choice? It looked good. Is it pretty to look at? What? That's why Lot made that choice? You're talking about why Abraham let Lot make the choice. I'm saying, why did Lot choose that area? Now, sounds right. It looked good, but is that it? It's just pretty?
Well, it looked richer than the land that he didn't choose.
That's right. It was material. For material gain. could feed his flocks. Great pastures, he thought. But there's a little key phrase at the end of verse 12. He pitched his tents where? Towards Sodom. Towards Sodom. Beautiful fields. Good choice for material reasons. So you come over to chapter 19. And you've got this story about Sodom and Gomorrah, where Lot's living. And the city is so wicked, God's going to destroy it. And what does Lot end up losing? What did he lose out of this? His wife? His what? Possessions? Son-in-laws? And his daughters to the world. Wow. That's a pretty high price to pay for green pastures. And you know what, fellas? We in a position of authority. So we make decisions. You know, Mom, I got an opportunity for a good job somewhere. I'm not talking about you, Sam. Got an opportunity for a good job somewhere. Well, is there a good church there? I don't know, but boy, I can make twice as much money. Is that a good decision? She has to respect it. He ought to talk with her about it, but is it worth it? What about your family? What about your faith? Lot had to pay for his decision. Let me ask you a question. Was Lot a godly man? Yes, he was. Look at 2 Peter chapter 2. Second Peter chapter 2. Look at verse 7. He rescued righteous Lot. He was righteous. He was a godly man. Righteous, godly men can make bad decisions. That interesting? Now the question is, ladies, if your wife, if your husband makes a bad decision, how do you react? Do you say, you ungodly thing, you stupid thing? Is that what you do? You think God would have been pleased if his wife had lived? You should have thrown that up in his face? Good men make bad choices sometimes. So that's a lesson to us as men. But that doesn't give the right to the wife to use that as leverage and throw that up in his face. So it may be a place you move for a job. It may be having to do with social, how you're going to spend your time socially, the kind of people you're going to have in your home, fellas. What kind of hobbies you're going to get involved in. You're the leader of the family. But just realize your decisions about how you spend your time, your money, where you live, is impacting your family. And the gains you may think you'll get out of these temporary measures may cost you in the long run. How's it going to impact your children? 15 years from now, will you be glad you made that decision? We can't look into the future, I know that, but it's something to think about, isn't it? As your children grow up, as you continue to develop and cultivate your relationship with your wife, is your decision going to be one that helps that or hurts that? A great history lesson with Lot about us and our decision-making, fellas. Any other comments before we move to 1 Samuel 25? Look at 1 Samuel 25. This is the story of David and Abigail. You remember the story? David's soldiers wanted Nabal, a rich man, plenty of flocks, to help feed his soldiers. They responded. Nabal responded very harshly. Implied David was rebelling against the king. And so word came back to David he got mad. I'm talking about he got real mad. So he told his soldiers, get your swords, we're on our way. We're gonna repay this no good rascal. You think they'd have killed him? Is it wrong to kill? No. Is it wrong to murder? Yeah. This is going to be murder. There's a difference in killing and murder. In fact, killing is commanded. Those in government are supposed to kill certain people. God told David to kill certain people. This wasn't that. This was out of personal vengeance. And so he's on his way. Just try to envision this. Here's David, dressed for war. All these rough guys, soldiers right behind him, they're on their way to, it's war, man. And they're mad. And so you get down in First Samuel chapter 25 and verse 23. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and dismounted from her donkey and fell on her face. And David bowed. And before David, and bowed herself to the ground. And then she began to reason with him. And you'll see that her reasoning was very good. Verse 31. This will not cause grief or a troubled heart to my Lord, both by having shed blood without cause and by my Lord having avenged himself. Shedding blood without cause. A matter of personal vengeance. And so... So she's trying to reason with him. What does David do? He listens to her. You talk about humility. Can you imagine what the other guys might have said? You listening to a woman? Yeah. She's right and I'm wrong. Did that make David weak?
No.
It didn't make him weak. And I guess David really didn't care what the soldiers thought. And so he actually commended her. It's very interesting in verse 32. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel who sent you this day. Did God appear in a vision to Abigail for her to go? How can David say God sent her? Providence. We talk about divine providence. David recognized divine providence. Isn't that interesting? And then he said, blessed be your discernment. Your judgment is better than mine. Blessed be your discernment. And blessed be you who have kept me this day from bloodshed and avenging myself by my own hand. And sometimes we need wives to calm our tempers and our, I'm a man, I'll do it as I want. I know I've been blessed in that way. To have a wife that say, hey, you better stop here and think about this.
Our good friend.
And so here you see men think macho means you don't listen to your wife, especially in the front of anybody. Suppose your children are standing there watching. Suppose your buddies know about it at work. Our pride can get in the way. This is a great example of times, sometimes we need to listen to our wives. What? Wait, let's see. I got, yes, sir.
Of course, eventually
she does marry her, but right now she's married to Nabal.
But what does that say about her marriage to Nabal?
Well, what does that say about her marriage to Nabal? She knew David was going to kill him. She says he's a foolish man, worthless. The servant said he's worthless. She knew he was difficult, and yet she's still trying to save his neck. That's a good point. And yet here she's seeking David's welfare. It's not just saving Nabal's life that's in view. It's her faith in the Lord. David's the king, or the anointed king.
Well, she's also having to save probably everyone else in the household.
That's probably true, because he'd wipe them all out. You're right. But it's her. Note her appeal is not save my husband. Please don't kill my husband. But you know, Ronnie's got a good point. But her appeal is on a much higher level. This is wrong, David. you're going to have to pay for this later if you do this. Think about this, David. Pretty discerning woman, isn't it? She must have been a remarkable woman to even live with Nabal in the first place. He was difficult. Very interesting story. Yes. If I understand your question, what she did would not have been something Nabal would have approved of. Is she therefore wrong? My answer would be no, because the will of God supersedes the will of the husband. And she's keeping David from violating the will of God. That's her intent. Her honor of God is what's at, the honor of God is what is at stake. That would be where I would stand. Some of you other wise folks in the audience want to comment on that? Have at it. I got one approval. Okay. So anyway, that would be my response, Keith. Second Samuel 11. Look at Second. My time is, man. I wanted to get 2 Samuel 11 and Judges, but it's 10:15.